There we go. Good Wednesday morning to you. It's the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lama. Without Ken Carmen or Anthony Lama, it's Daryl Ryder and Danny Cunningham. Don't look now. Here come them Guardians. Audio courtesy of Guardians TV and Major League Baseball. As they now have won 10 of 12. They're getting hot right at the right time for Browns training camp to begin. Their timing is impeccable. When everybody was watching and paying attention to them, Danny, straight down the elevator shaft they went. And now that the Browns are getting ready to convene out in Berea, or I should say they've already convened out in Berea, and they're ready to hit the practice fields later this afternoon. Here come the Guardians. They've won 10 of 12. Jose Ramirez, he is feeling well. Ball is flying off his bat and out of the ballpark. Kyle Manzardo, nice to see him get some playing time, and he's making contact with baseball, so I don't know, maybe you want to keep him in the lineup, but yeah, good to see the Guardians seem to have pulled themselves up by the bootstraps.
Yeah, it sort of makes you wonder where this team could be had they not had that 10-game losing streak. Like, that is, to me, always going to be, and I hate to be negative and bring that immediately up because they've won 10 of 12 and they've played awesome baseball lately, and of course, you do have to bring that with the caveat of, well, who exactly have they beaten? I know they swept the Houston Astros to sort of begin this 10 of 12 stretch that they're on. But I will just look at this and say, man, kind of what could have been, right? Because I do think, and they've gone from, I believe their low watermark was 15 games behind the Detroit Tigers in the American League Central.
15 and a half.
And I don't know what it was as far as how far back they were in the wild card race, but they have made up a lot of ground in both those areas.
They were like seven in the wild.
Right, because now they're down to two and a half. They're nine games behind the Tigers. And, like, I still think winning the division is a pipe dream. I don't think that's something that's going to happen. I could see this team, Daryl, making a run into the postseason. But the thing that's going to bother me, because I don't think that they should be buyers at the trade deadline. I don't think they're good enough to justify it. But the thing that's going to bother me is that this is a team that sort of, no matter what happens the rest of the way, and I would love for nothing more than to be 100% wrong about this, is I don't think that this is a team that's capable of winning the World Series this year, and that bums me out.
Yeah, I don't think that they're a threat to anyone. I've said it, and look, I would just tell Guardian fans to enjoy whatever happens between now and the end of September and early to mid-October. I think that they're going to chase down that second wild card. Yeah, it's single digits now. The objects in the rearview mirror are starting to get a little bigger and bigger. If you're the Detroit Tigers, here come the Guardians now. It is a nine-game lead for them in the American League Central Division. But this team is not a threat to anybody. And Owen and I have kind of gone back and forth this week about this. I get that. Just get in the tournament. The old Mark Shapiro theory. Just get in and anything can happen. Because baseball is a very stupid game at times and weird stuff happens. But realistically, they are not a serious contender like they showed themselves to be last fall when they came within three wins of getting back to the World Series.
But when were they serious contenders for you last fall? Because they weren't serious contenders until, you know, they started off 40-20.
Yeah.
Then they played 500 ball the rest of the year. They stayed 20 games over 500 the rest of the season. It's not like they ran away with the thing. It wasn't until the playoffs that they showed that, oh, we might have something here. I think you guys are greatly underselling what they've done the last 2 weeks and the ability. They were 15.5. They got swept by the Tigers, and they were 15.5 games back from them because of that, right? They went into it 12.5 back. They win one of those games in that series, and they should have won two of them at least, if not all three.
Well, they got great pitching efforts in that series and could not hit the baseball.
One run, two runs, and then, what, five or seven, but it was in, like, the 11th inning,
They gave up
right?
six runs in the 10th inning yes. in the final game of that, because that was the game where Bo Naylor had a pass ball.
Correct.
When Emmanuel Clase yes. had a save situation, they were
up 1-0.
With two outs
in the ninth, and they were up a run,
They
right?
should have beaten Tarik Skubal.
Yes,
yeah.
correct. And so, if you change that series now with what has happened, then, you know, you're right in the division again. You're right in the division. But because they didn't do well in that series, the division still seems out of reach, right? There's 62 games left. They're nine games out. They're going to need a lot of help from the Tigers to get there. They play them six more times.
Which is all the second It's the last week of the season and the second last week of the season. They don't see the Tigers again until late September.
Correct.
So by then it could be they one could be in a great position where if they go 6-0, like the division could be theirs, or it could just be out of reach.
And I'm not saying crown them as something special right now, because I agree they've done a lot of things to hold themselves back, and that's from a front office standpoint of not getting kids opportunities, right? Not even the whole bringing up Delauder or Kafis or any of that stuff. It's also keeping the roster the way it is. And a lot of that is also on Stephen Vogt for, you know, his platoon situations and the times that he chooses to pitch hit certain people. Manzardo, one of those where Manzardo's hot, and then we bring David Fry in to bat for him. They still end up getting the wins, but there are concerns there, but I can't say that they're not contenders. I'm not saying they are. I can't say they're not contenders.
I just don't think that baseball is. And Darryl, what you said about, you know, you get into the tournament and anything can happen, I don't know that that's as true as it once was. Like, I don't think that that is as true as it was 10 years ago, because you look at what this team, what this organization did in 2016. That team was not great. That was a good team. That was a very good team, but it was not a great team. It was not a team that I think you look at, if you brought back that exact team right now, in that form, I don't know that you look at that team as a World Series contender, because now I think we've gotten to the point where the best teams, I do think, are so much better that they're going to win more often than not. Like the randomness, I think, has been a little bit sucked out of baseball's postseason. And that is something that I think inherently hurts the Guardians, because they organizationally, since they lost in 2017 to the Yankees, when that 2017 team, I think, has an argument as the greatest or the best Cleveland baseball team of my entire lifetime. But they got unlucky. And since then, I think their philosophy as an organization has been, let's get good enough to be lucky. But I think the threshold for being good enough has risen to the point where now it's so much more difficult for them to get to that point. And I just don't think they're at that point this year. Like, I don't think that this team, as currently constructed, is good enough to get lucky in the postseason. They might be good enough to make the postseason, but I don't view them as a team right now that can win a series or two series, which they're probably going to be in the wild card series if they make the postseason. Like, we're not looking at this team as one that's going to have a bye. So you're going to have to win three series to get to the World Series and then beat someone really good. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't either. And the only luck they have been able to create for themselves this year mostly is bad luck, because they are not a fundamentally sound ball club, not by any stretch of the imagination, not defensively, not on the base paths. They have run themselves out of innings. They've run themselves out of games. They have committed errors at the worst possible times. You're right. The diluted playoff format now that Major League Baseball has adopted is... At first, I was a fan of it because you give more teams hope that, you know, you can be a contender, which I think complicates your trade deadline a little bit. Not as many teams now are ready to run up the white flag and be sellers, because they're convinced that what I was talking about, hey, you know, we're a couple of games out, we get in, anything can happen. But I would agree with you, Danny. I do think that it is harder now to win a World Series today than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago, just because of this new baseball format. The more rounds you add to a postseason, the more steps you have to climb, the harder it is to win it all. That's why, like, you know, when we have the conversation about the Cavaliers and trying to, you know, win another NBA championship, and I try not to get into that championship or bust mindset with them, because I've covered enough playoff teams that I've had a front row seat of how difficult it is to climb those individual steps to get back to that level. Now, that's not to say as a fan you should not expect that of your team and want them to do that. But you're right. You look at this Guardians team right now, it still is Stephen Kwan. It's Jose Ramirez. At times, it's Carlos Santana. It was good to see Kyle Manzardo last night. And then it's random guy contributes night, or random guy costs you the game night, depending on how it goes. But the fact that they have been able to bounce back after just falling straight down the elevator shaft, I wrote them off. I'm not alone. Everybody else in the world had written them off. We're going to talk to Zach Meisel of The Athletic coming up at 8:20. Going to find out, and I'll ask you this, Danny, how much do you think this turning of the tide now, going from losing 10 in a row, falling 15 and a half behind the Tigers in the division, to winning 10 of 12, shaving that lead down to 9, how much do you think that changes the front office's perspective on just where this ball club is and maybe their approach come the trade deadline?
I don't think it really changes much of anything for them, because I do think that if you want to give the front office credit for one thing, it's that they're not going to overreact to these things. Just in the same way that they were not going to overreact to the team losing 10 in a row.
I would like the front office just to react.
Right. I mean, that's fair too, but you can't overreact if you don't react.
Right.
So,
I would like them just to react. Show me a pulse.
Right. But I don't expect much of it. Like, if anything, I expect them to be moderate sellers at the trade deadline. I don't expect there to be some fire sale. There should not be some fire sale. I don't think that there's going to be some big buy at the trade deadline. And ultimately, Daryl, I think we have to look a little bit deeper into this team, because one, they do have a negative run differential where they've been outscored on the year by around 30 runs, which is not a very good number for a team that's 500. Like, that tells you, okay, the 500 record is a little bit fluky. And then if you look at how they've broken down against other teams, they are 21-37 against teams that are 500 or above.
I mentioned that yesterday.
And 29-13 against below 500 teams. So they have done a good job taking care of business, which you deserve credit for, because you know what it is easy to do? It's easy to kick games against bad teams and not beat those teams. But they've also not proven that they should be taken seriously, because when the good teams have come to town, or when they've faced good teams on the road, they've not looked anything that resembles a contender.
Yeah, absolutely. The above 500 record, or I should say the record against teams above 500, that's what stood out to me when I mentioned it on yesterday's show. That's your litmus test. You know, you're right. Let's give them their props. They are getting fat on the teams they should be feasting on. The Orioles are terrible. They are just not a good baseball team this year. I would argue that Baltimore potentially could be the most disappointing team in baseball. There were high expectations for them coming into this season, and it has been a massive disaster. I was on our sister station in Baltimore earlier this week, and we were talking a little baseball, and you can sense the frustration in Baltimore with how this season has gone from them. But I would also argue, too, here in Cleveland, it's been frustrating because the Guardians were 3 wins away from the World Series. I know the Yankees were a juggernaut in the American League last year before they ran into the Dodgers. But the reality was, like you alluded to, I don't know that they were legit ready for prime time last year. And they certainly aren't ready for it this year. For me, it's get your wild card spot and see what you do in the playoffs. Enjoy the couple playoff games. Pat yourself on the back. Tell yourself how good your ball club is. Go into next offseason, hopefully with not only a short but a long-term strategy to set this thing up to where you can compete with the best of the best. They found ways to compete with, or to beat, I should say, the worst of the worst. Now they got to find a way to position themselves where they can beat those good ball clubs and compete for a World Series. And I just don't know that that's their undying motivation. You cover the Cavaliers. You've had a front row seat. They're motivated to win an NBA championship.
Absolutely.
I think that that's fair
Absolutely.
To say.
Absolutely. Yes.
We can criticize them. They didn't get past the second round again. We can criticize that. But they're motivated to win an NBA championship. And we'll see if they can pull it off in the next couple of years. I just don't, with all due respect, I don't feel like the Guardians are motivated by 1948.
Well, that's
I don't feel like organizationally they are driven by that. I feel like it's what you and I have been talking about. Let's field an entertaining, competitive ball club that can get us to the postseason, and whatever happens, happens to happen.
If you didn't know better, you would look at these two organizations in town and say that the Cavs are the one that has the longest title drought in their sport, with the way that they've operated, because they just won 64 games. And listen, They failed in the postseason, and I think they will all tell you that they failed in the postseason, but they made moves this offseason to try and make themselves better when next postseason comes around. The Guardians, I don't think, failed in the postseason last year. I do not think that getting to the ALCS can be looked at for them as a failure, but then they didn't get better in the offseason. They did not want to improve their chances, and that is where my biggest issue lies with them.
You know what that song means. Oh, fired up, Bowen.
Well, Ken normally sings when we play this song, so you're in his seat today. You got to do the same.
Yeah, let it rip, Daryl.
I can't sing, but crank it up.
Ken can't sing either. He still does.
Yeah. It's Browns training camp opening day.
I wanted Daryl to sing.
Yeah, no, we're not singing. Listen, 4 hours of me is enough. Me singing within that 4 hours is a little much.
Yeah. Oh, let's see what happens.
Yeah, come on.
And the only way that I would even consider singing, it would require significant amounts of alcohol, which I promise you, during this season, I probably will be drinking.
If we can get some form of a Levert in here, will you sing?
No.
I'll put a signal out to any Leverts in the area.
I have two rules in life.
That's fine.
I do admit that I'm a very self-conscious individual at times, and I do not sing, I do not dance. I do enough in my regular day-to-day life to just utterly embarrass myself with my lack of coordination and various other areas that many of people feel that I'm deficient in. We do not sing, we do not dance. But Danny, it is the kickoff of Brown's training camp. I'm sure everybody is pumped and excited. Training camp coverage powered by Classic Ford and Classic Chevy in Mentor. Practice this afternoon around 4 o'clock. Fans are going to be out there. It's going to be like 95 degrees. So wear your sunscreen, hydrate. You're going to need it. But how jazzed are you for not one, not two, not three, but four man quarterback competition?
I mean, I think that this is the only thing to be excited about with this training camp, is to see what these rookie quarterbacks look like, truthfully, because we know who Joe Flacco is, and I think we know who Kenny Pickett is. I know there might be some people that have a little bit more excitement about him and the fact that maybe he could have a season similar to what Sam Darnold had with the Minnesota Vikings last year, and that is not something personally that I buy as a possibility, because I've never thought that he was good. I never saw it with Kenny Pickett, where at least with Sam Darnold in the past, you could see a fuzzy outline of a guy that could be pretty good in the NFL. Just, you know, he wasn't able to put it all together prior to last season for the first 16 games with the Minnesota Vikings. But I think that the unknowns are the exciting thing, because we don't know exactly what Shedeur Sanders is going to look like. We don't know what Dylan Gabriel is going to look like. Maybe one of those guys pans out, and I'm not necessarily, Daryl, ready to talk myself into one of those guys as a franchise type quarterback, because if they were, I don't think they would have been drafted in the third and fifth round respectively. But maybe we've got something. Maybe we'll find something.
You know,
maybe
what?
They'll look competent in a way that Browns quarterbacks so rarely can.
You know what? Since you mentioned, I think we need to power rank the quarterbacks. We got four guys to pick from, right? I think that we just might have to rank them. Here we go.
Are we doing this going into today? Is this expected
into week one? This is Danny's feeling. What do you feel right now?
Right now, Joe Flacco, number one.
Okay.
Dylan Gabriel, number two.
Interesting.
Shedeur Sanders, number three. And Kenny Pickett, number four.
Ooh.
No love for Kenny Pickett.
I think Kenny Pickett stinks. He's not good. I have seen far too many Andrew Filippone tweets about this guy being good for me to ever think he's good.
Yeah,
well, you're going to get a lot of tweets here in a few minutes, too, from relatives.
I think you need to consider the source of those tweets, though. I've seen Andrew Filippone's timeline. Accuracy, not a thing. Okay, my turn to rank the quarterbacks. Ready? Here we go. Numero uno, Joe Flacco. I am going to go Shedeur Sanders, number two. Kenny Pickett, number three. And mostly because I can't see him when he's on the field, Dylan Gabriel, number four. There we go. There is your inaugural 2025 NFL training camp quarterback power rankings, the unofficial Ken Carmen Show with Anthony DeLima quarterback power rankings. I'm expecting those gentlemen when they return next week to continue what I hope to have begun, a storied tradition on this show, a weekly ranking of these quarterbacks.
Yes, nobody will ever forget where they were when we ranked the quarterbacks, Daryl.
It is a seminal moment in the history of this show. Look, the quarterbacks are going to take center stage. They always do. You know, look, this isn't Brady Quinn versus Derek Anderson, but it kind of feels that way. It's not Tim Couch, having to compete with just a variety of guys when he was here. But it is unique in the sense that it's a four-man competition. I, by the way, don't buy that it's a four-man competition. No. I have not been shy about saying that. I don't believe it's a four-man competition, not by any stretch of the imagination. Just remember what you touched on. And I mentioned this yesterday. Let's be fair. Let's be realistic. And I know, like, for fans, that's not what being a fan is all about. But that's what I'm about. As someone who covers the team, as someone who sits in the chair here in front of a microphone, I just feel that I have a responsibility there. And I'm not going to hype guys unnecessarily, even though I know, like, fans wanted me to wake up this morning and, you know, they're tuning in and they want me to just be all jazzed and fired up and getting behind one of these guys to be the guy this year and take the bull by the horns. I just can't do it. Too many questions. I can make a case for each of the four guys. I can make a case for each of the four guys not to be the guy. But Dylan Gabriel's a third-round pick.
Right.
Shedeur Sanders was a fifth-round pick.
Correct.
That's not me sitting here taking pot shots at either one of those guys. That's just me trying to look through a realistic lens that I never have expectation that a third-round pick is a week one starter or that a fifth-round pick is a week one starter.
At any position, not just quarterback. At any position.
Well, yeah, most any position. You know, maybe if it's an offensive lineman, you might think they can slide in there. But, like, I can't bring myself to do that. And I can't bring myself to sell that to you Browns fans because I just don't think it's fair. Yes, Shedeur has the raw talent. There's no question about that. But I cannot stress this enough. It's raw talent. And also, the Browns went into the draft, and I know the Shedeur, the Shishils, including two of them here at the station, one Jonathan Peterlin, who is Shishil Sr., and then Shishil Jr., my partner on Sundays, Nick Padone, will be upset with me saying this, but they had no intention of drafting Shedeur Sanders. That was a situation where it's the fifth round, you got a couple of picks in your pocket in the sixth and the seventh round, you're just like, we did everything we came here to do. Let's call our friends in Philadelphia. Why not? He's still on the board. Maybe we catch lightning in a bottle. Let's go ahead and draft the kid. Why not? It was a why not pick. And again, I don't say that disrespectfully towards Shedeur, and it's not a criticism, but it is a reality. And there are things in his game that I know organizationally the Browns want to like get out of it. Like they want him to break a couple of habits as well. So I don't have any illusions that he's going to be ready. Now, the moment he takes the field, city's going to go bananas. The country's going to go bananas. All the Shishils are going to go bananas. But I don't feel like he's ready. I don't feel like Dylan Gabriel is ready. They like they like the
so
way.
So what do they like about him? What do they like about Dylan Gabriel? Why was he the guy that they went with before Shedeur? What do they like after seeing him in the minicamp settings, the OTA settings, going into training camp? Why is Dylan Gabriel, I think, inside that building in Berea, more highly regarded than Shedeur Sanders is?
They like the physical toolbox. And when I say physical toolbox, I'm talking arm strength. They like the mental aspect. They like how he processes. They like how he sees and feels about the game and whatnot. And look, to be honest, there are things to like about Dylan Gabriel. Like, let's be clear about that. But I don't think it's enough at this level to be successful. And again, it's a third round pick. That's why I feel like this is a two-man competition. It's coming down to Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco. They love themselves some Kenny Pickett.
I don't get it either.
I think a lot of it has to do with that He has some sort of the intangibles, right? He played some of the most god-awful, ugly football you could imagine in Pittsburgh. But when the fourth quarter came, despite all that, he found a way to win 6-7 games late.
I think that's just anyone in Pittsburgh does that.
Right.
I don't think it matters who the quarterback is. The Pittsburgh Steelers do that. That's who they are.
Like, he might have been successful in spite of himself and in spite of Matt Canada.
Now, the Matt Canada thing I can listen to because that guy was one of the worst offensive coordinators I can remember in the NFL. So I can listen to that aspect of things, but I cannot look at anything Kenny Pickett has done outside of really one good year as a fifth-year senior in college.
And take it seriously?
Yes, and say that guy is good. Like, if you look at his body of work at Pitt, prior to that final year, he was not anybody that was on anybody's draft radar. Like, he was not thought of as a future NFL quarterback. Then he's overdrafted in the first round because he went to Pitt and the Pittsburgh Steelers need a quarterback. And it's a great story, and I understand all that. Gets to the NFL, he stinks. And then he comes, like, he goes to Philadelphia and he's a backup, and that's fine. And we're just, I don't think expecting anything of him is the right thing to do.
Browns training camp gets underway today. Fans will be invited out into Berea. 8 practices. The first is on Friday. That'll be a 2 p.m. practice. Saturday, 9:30 in the morning. Monday, July 28th, 2 p.m. Same thing for Tuesday, the 29th. Wednesday, the 30th, 9:30 practice in the morning there. So you'll be up bright and early. Friday, August 1st is a 2 p.m. Saturday, August 2nd is a 9:30 practice again. And then Monday, August 4th, the final open practice to fans. That will be a 2 p.m. practice. For me, though, I will be out there this afternoon around noonish for player availability.
I can sense the excitement in your voice, Daryl.
I am looking forward to seeing Kevin Stefanski and the guys. I'm looking forward to watching them go through the paces of their first official full team workout. Going to be a little shorter today. They do the ramp up period here now.
Sure. No need to go too hard on July 23rd.
You know, is this where I go old man yells at cloud and complain about how long training camp is?
I don't know that. Sure.
I just think it's too long now with the condition that these players are in physically.
See, I feel like the old man yells at cloud take would be that it's not long enough, that back in your day it was tougher and rougher.
No. The training camp is plenty long enough. I feel that it is entirely too long. They need to shorten this thing up. Look, last open practice is August 4th. The Browns aren't going to play a regular season game. Week one's not until September 7th. That's over a month.
That's a very long time.
It's ridiculously long. And I'm not blaming the Browns for that. Of course, they're going to go to Carolina for a joint practice. They're going to go to Philadelphia for a couple of joint practices. That's where the rubber meets the road. Those joint practices. Because they tend to tell us just how this season is going to go. Just like last year against the Vikings, right? Remember the practice where like the offensive line couldn't get set?
Yes.
They could not do the basic function of lining up and not moving until the football was snapped. Like, every play was a pre-snap penalty. And then there was the Deshaun seeing ghosts every time a Viking defender broke through. And so, I will admit, at the time, I myself downplayed it a little bit, and I probably shouldn't have.
Well, also, wasn't the defense awesome in that setting, too?
Yep.
Like, wasn't the defense...
Yeah,
terrorizing Sam Darnold, and that certainly did not carry over because the Browns' defense wasn't as good, and Sam Darnold turned out to be great last year.
But the Browns ended up leading the NFL in pre-snap penalties last year.
Sure.
We know what happened with Deshaun pre-Achilles injury.
He was bad.
That you're being very generous.
He was very bad.
And so that was a sign of things to come. I remember when the Giants came to town. Same thing. I remember practices against the Bills. The Eagles slapping them around for a couple of days. Like, the joint practices are where you really get the pulse of where the team is and what it's going to be like. So the trip to Carolina, the trip to Philadelphia, going to be very, very important for this football team as they get ready for the 2025 season. Of course, Danny, like, we are going to talk about the quarterback situation until we're blue in the face, even after they have a resolution. And by resolution, I mean they I guess
pick somebody.
Pick somebody out of a hat. Flip. I mean, I don't think that Kevin Stefanski is going to go full Romeo Crennel here and start flipping coins. But you know, I don't know. I think that'd be pretty entertaining if the Browns are always looking for some good content for social media. That'd be some pretty cool content, right?
I think that'd be pretty embarrassing.
But in a good way, right? In a fun way.
I don't know
way.
That embarrassing is ever in a good way, but continue.
I don't know. People think that when I do stuff, it's embarrassing in a good way.
Yeah, I don't know if an organization...
Because it gives them the comedic material to pick on me. That's correct. That's
yes.
what I mean.
Yes. Right. I don't know that the Browns need more of that. I think they've got plenty.
You feel the jokes just write themselves.
I do.
Okay.
I think they wear the jokes on their heads.
Oh, so you're not going to be... You're not.
That's later today, Danny.
Yeah, that's later today.
Oh, right.
Big reveal coming later today.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be brown. Spoiler alert, it's going to be brown.
I said, they don't need to flip a coin to decide who the quarterback is.
Right.
I think we are there.
But while we incessantly focus on every little detail when it comes to the quarterbacks, you know, who's talking to who on the practice field, who's getting reps, when, with who, what flavor of Gatorade are they drinking during the down portions, right? How does Kevin Stefanski split these guys up? My belief is he's just going to keep doing what he did during the offseason program. Minicamp, put the rookies together, put the two vets on separate fields so you maximize the time for your reps. But I want to talk about the rest of this football team because, yeah, no question about it, how this season is going to go how the quarterbacks go, right? And that's the way it is every year. Good quarterback play usually means you're going to have a good year. If you have a quarterback carousel, either because of injury or because none of these guys can play, you're probably in for a very long year. And I would argue that if we do see Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders at some point, it's been a long year. But there are other things to watch at training camp. Again, first open practice for you fans is going to be on Friday. At 2 p.m. Out in Berea. I am intrigued by two position groups. I'm intrigued by the defensive line, and I'm intrigued by the linebacker core. Not so much the wide receivers. I have way too many questions about the wide receivers, and I don't know that they have a lot of answers at that particular position.
Sure.
But Mason Graham might be the least talked about top five draft pick I can ever remember. And the Browns have had a lot of top five draft picks.
They have, yes. Quite a few. It's an annual occurrence.
Well,
nearly.
Regular occurrence. It's not groundbreaking when they have a top five pick. But, like, no one's really talking about him. Carson Schwessinger, who was their first second-round pick. That was our...
What, 33 overall?
Yeah, that was our second oh-my moment. So we had four.
Yeah, I did not know who that guy was before they picked him.
Yeah, we had four oh my moments during that draft. Trading out of two at Jacksonville, giving up Travis Hunter, and then sliding down to five and taking Mason Graham, getting the Jaguars' first round pick next year. Then Carson Schwessinger being picked in the second round. Then them picking Dillon Gabriel in the third round. And then I think you can figure out what the fourth and final oh wow moment was, and that obviously us being in the middle of an introductory press conference of their draft picks, and they trade up and draft Shedeur Sanders, and then we wrapped up that press conference in rather rapid fashion. With all due apologies to those rookies, it hit the fan in the middle of the draft, and they ultimately ended up making that trade for Shedeur Sanders. So we had four oh my moments in that draft. And I also, the other thing, aside from me, you know, as far as the defensive line and linebackers, is the rookie class in general. Like, Harold Fannin Jr., I think, is going to be a significant contributor.
Sure.
But the rookie class this year, even with Quinshon Judkins going through his legal issues and the fact that he's not signed, and, you know, that's all got to work itself out, and we'll find out what the NFL does as far as his permitted availability come week one. I honestly feel there's a lot to watch in this training camp that has nothing to do with the quarterbacks.
Right, and I think there is stuff on the offense that has a lot to watch that is not quarterback-centric. And I look at what this offensive line is going to look like. Having a new offensive line coach after last year was just an abject disaster at that spot. And getting back to this scheme that Kevin Stefanski ran so well when the Browns were good under him a few years back, that is the one thing that I look at and say, okay, aside from the quarterbacks, could this be the thing that we look back on this training camp and say, you know what, that was a really good sign a few months ago when we do get into the season, that we saw flashes that the offensive line maybe didn't look like it did during the 2020 season when the Browns were sort of at their peak with Kevin Stefanski in this right. zone running system. But does it look much closer to that than it did the 2024 season? I do think that we could be talking about that in a positive way. And if that is the case, that is the one thing that would make me feel as if, okay, the Browns are maybe going to be a little bit better than I personally am anticipating them being.